The Torah, the Jewish law, consists basically of five books. Genesis, Exodus, Deuteronomy, Numbers, and Leviticus. And while there are 10 commandments, that these five books basically go about sort of describing how to sort of live out the 10 commandments and what it means to sort of follow them in different aspects in your life. And so Jesus, you know, as we sort of finish the Sermon on the Mount, sort of looks at his apostles and looks at gospel, not only his apostles, but also his followers, and sort of reminds them that it's not so much the letter of the law that we have to be interested in, but rather it is sort of the heart of the law. And so he sort of talks to us about that way. And in doing so, he reminds us, you know, to love our enemies. And as he's talking to the apostles, his sort of, it's his sense of humor sort of comes out. I mean, many times, you know, we have heard an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth. See, that's sort of the letter of the law. In other words, if somebody does something to you, that you have the right to do that back to them. That's the letter of the law. But I say to you, offer no resistance to one who does you evil. If someone strikes you on your right cheek, turn the other one as well. Now, Jesus was talking to basically a right-handed society, as basically probably most of us here are right-handed. And to realize that for a right-handed person to hit somebody on the right cheek, they sort of have to do it backhanded. In other words, it's more of a slap like this than like this. And the thing is when you do that, it's not so much that you are hitting somebody to hurt them, but rather it is sort of, you're nothing. You're nobody. It's sort of a put down. That I am sort of, you are sort of beneath me, under my dignity. And so Jesus says, well, then turn and offer your left as well. And so what happens is a person who is sitting there hitting comes to realize that you are their equal, not somebody to be looked down on to. If somebody wants to go to law over your tunic, hand over your cloak as well. Again, you know that if they're asking for the tunic, it means it's that you're very poor. And all you really have to offer in collateral for the debt that you owe is the clothes that you're wearing. And so the thing is that take off not only your tunic, but take off your cloak as well. So basically is that you're sort of stripping down to nothing. So that the person who is looking to you is sitting there saying, is that I have made you naked. So who does it look well on? The person who has given his clothes or the person who is forcing you to go naked because I need, I want what you owe me. So someone pressed you for service for 1 mile, go for 2 miles. And the Roman law, the Romans could make you carry whatever for 1 mile. But if they ask you to carry it for more than 1 mile, it is considered abuse. It is considered, you know, sort of a punishment. And therefore, that they become liable for abusing you. So the thing is, when they ask you to go a mile, you go 2 miles, you are sitting there saying, is that you are abusing me. And so it comes back upon the person who is asking rather than the person who is doing. And so what Jesus is sort of saying is that when someone sits there and confronts you with evil, do not do evil back, but somehow sort of, you know, turn it back on them in a non-violent way. I sometimes, you know, get upset with the Right to Life people, especially some of the Right to Life politicians. Because, you know, while they are very good with, you know, working on, you know, the doing away with abortion and bringing forth, you know, the unborn and giving them life, and sometimes, you know, they're not too great about what's going to happen to them after they are born. Right now in the Ohio Senate, we're looking forward to sit there and to cut, you know, staff. And to cut, you know, basically aid to the poor. And while, you know, a lot of people say, well, this is great because it's going to save our state a lot of money, that you realize probably that that money is just going to go someplace else. And that while sometimes, yeah, that a lot of people may abuse that privilege, but there are a lot of others who really depend upon that. And so because of that, you know, a lot of children are going to go hungry. You know, taking away, you know, some meals at school. Some meals that children depend upon for probably their only real decent meal of the day. And then when it comes, you know, to the other extreme, you know, when we are ready to put a person to death, somehow, you know, that life doesn't seem to be so important. It doesn't seem to be so sacred that we can vote and we can think and we can say, okay, it's okay because this person has done something so terrible and so wrong, they deserve to die. And to do that, you know, they sort of look back and say, well, look at God in the Old Testament. And we see, you know, a very vengeful God, a God who was very willing to sit there and destroy those who did wrong and those who did evil. But that's not true. Because if you look at God, even the God of the Old Testament, we see a very loving, gracious, a very kind and merciful God. Our first story of murder in the Bible is the story of Cain and Abel. Well, Cain kills Abel. And God approaches Cain and says, where is your brother? And Cain admits that he killed him. And so God says, you know, I am going to put a mark on you. And Cain says to him, well, if you put a mark on me, that when I go into the other countries and you cast me out, I'm going to be a stranger. And therefore, as a stranger, I am going to be, your people are going to sit there and look down on me. They're going to treat me difficult. They're going to sit there and punish me. And God says, no. But even though you have killed your brother, even though you killed Abel, that whoever does harm to you, that I too will sit there and cause them, not physical problems, but discomfort. In other words, God protected Cain and looked down with him with kind and merciful, even of what he had done. And then there was the story of Moses as he's leading the people into the desert and he's being followed and he crosses the Red Sea. And this is sort of a Midrash story. Now, I don't know whether you've ever heard the story of Midrash before, or the term, but basically Midrash is sort of some of the common stories that go around things that have happened in the Bible and about Jesus, and about some of the saints. The story of Saint Christopher, was a Midrash story. It was, you know, that he carried Jesus across a stream. And the thing is, Midrashes were stories that were common in the time of the people, but the thing is that they cannot be proven in fact. And there was a Midrash story about that when Moses crossed the Red Sea, and then Pharaoh and his army went in and followed him, and that Moses lowered his arms and the waters came across them, and so that the Pharaoh and his soldiers were drowned in the horses. And the Midrash story is that when this happened, that the Jewish people, at the request of Moses' wife, began to sing and to dance and to praise God for what he had done, for his sitting there and saving them from the Pharaoh and his army and protecting them. And that the angels of heaven saw this, and they began to start dancing and singing and proclaiming with the Jewish people. And God turned to them and said, why are you singing and dancing and proclaiming? Because my people are drowning. They are being killed. This is not something to sing. Even though the Pharaoh was not a believer of God, was not his follower, was even out trying to destroy him and destroy his people, God still looked upon them as his children. And that this was a sad time, a sad moment, that he had to destroy his children to save Israel. And then there's Jesus upon the cross. As he's dying, what does he say? As he looks out upon the Romans who are crucifying him, upon the Jews who have turned against him, from Palm Sunday to proclaiming his glory to Holy Thursday and Good Friday, shouting, crucify him, crucify him. And what does Jesus say? Father, forgive them, for they know not what they are doing. God and Jesus always loving and merciful and forgiving, because every individual was born in the image and likeness of God and is so loved by God. There was a priest who was teaching in a Catholic school in Chicago at the time that Jeffrey Dahmer was caught and was going on trial. And remember, Jeffrey Dahmer basically took young boys, basically killed them, and cut them up, and put them in like a freezer. And so this priest was talking to his class, and he said, what should we do with him? And the class responded, kill him! He deserves to die! Look at all that he has done. Look at all the lives he has taken and how he has sit there and what he has done. He deserves to die. He deserves the death penalty. And then the priest said, well, what if this man was your younger brother? Someone that you grew up with, laughed with, played with, sang with, who was a very loving and good individual. But somewhere along in life, he changed. And he became evil. What would you do then? And the class thought about it. And they said, well, first of all, you know, we got to put him away so he can't hurt anybody else. And then, okay, yeah, we agree with that. But then rather than killing him, maybe we should try to find out what happened, why he became evil, and maybe seek his help. that all of a sudden, you know, when that individual, that murderer, became not a stranger, but someone, you know, sort of tied to them, their feelings changed. As we were sort of talking about this last night, my wife shared me the story of a friend of hers, a friend of ours, a family in Tiffin, that this girl lost her uncle. He was murdered out in Oregon. And he went to Oregon when he was caught and he was tried. And when it came time for the judgment, you know, for the penalty, of course he was liable for the death penalty. So the debate was whether, you know, to put him in prison for life without any hope for parole, or to, you know, sentence him to die. And the family got up and said, you know, we believe in the right to life, all life. And therefore, you know, because of that, we forgive this individual. And do not want him put to death, but rather to be given life imprisonment. And so that's what the court found. And very interesting that in the years to come, that this individual and the family very often will communicate back and forth together. And to do that, and to change. I guess when it comes to looking upon our enemies, or dealing with those who we consider are different than us, I guess our goal as Christians is to look upon them as God sees them, as one like himself, as one with the same right to dignity, as our brothers and sisters in God, and to treat them not as a stranger, but as someone who is personally tied to us. Generally, for those that are close to us, we have a tendency to be more lenient, to be more, you know, forgiving, to be a little bit less quick to judge or to punish. And the thing is that God and Jesus call us to treat everyone like that. To be holy, to be like God, is to sort of to be kind and merciful, like we heard in our responsorial song. And so when we deal with those who differ from us, who maybe we don't agree with, who even sit there and may want to try to harm us, that we're called as Christians to strive to be like God, to be kind and merciful and forgiveness, to answer evil not with evil, but with kindness, forgiveness, and compassion. In doing that, truly, you know, we bring the love of God, and we ourselves find the peace and happiness of being God's loving children. In the name of the Father, and of the Son, and of the Holy Spirit.